Hey everyone, you're tuned into the False Graves podcast. I'm your host, AK Baby Do the Lightbringer, and I'm here with a special guest, Sam Dino, the Sauce. So, before we get started, I have a couple very important announcements to make. For those wondering, where is Furman? I have some dire news to report. Mr. Furman, shortly after the cricket episode, started to incur some severe illness. We're not sure as to his actual condition, but let's just say he's been perpetually getting less and less healthy as time goes on. And he tried his hardest to make it in tonight, but he just lacked the capability, the physical capability to make it in. And we're not sure the status of his health, but when we find out, I'll report it as soon as possible. He's currently getting some testing done. And when we get the results back, I'll be sure to let the viewers know. Now, our guest tonight, Sam Dino, the Sauce, is a chosen representative to fill in for Mr. Furman from the BMMA, the Big Mommy Milkers Association. And so, I guess to get started, I want to ask you, how did you get the name The Sauce?
Sam Dino. The Sauce came with being a young chemist. I could step in the lab, take a little bit of nothing and make something out of it. Something great that people wanted, people desired my creations. So
right.
I became the Sauce by being able to bring the flavor into a situation or a product right. That's normally bland and not desirable.
So, another alias you've been known by is The Pure. Does that relate to the sauce in any way? Like the type of ingredients you use?
The purest came after the sauce.
I got you.
Because it needed to be refined. And yeah. The sauce is a lot of things that was, I wouldn't say fictitious, but...
maybe a lot of byproducts.
A lot of byproducts.
Some artificial ingredients.
Yeah. And the Paris is based more on longevity and truth.
I got you.
So that's more desirable than the flavor. Because the flavor usually don't last.
Right. But you're still the sauce, but now you're just a purer form of it.
That's it.
A pure sauce.
Yes. So that gives me the ability to be able to mimic what I've started as a child.
Right.
And insert it into the next generation to keep the sauce going, keep the sauce new and fresh
right.
all the time.
So we've got some people asking... where we met each other, people are wanting to know where I met the sauce. If you don't care to tell the story, I'd be up for it.
Oh, you go right ahead.
So me and the sauce, we actually go way back, believe it or not. We've been around for, 10 years?
Yeah.
We've known each other.
In this life cycle.
Yeah. I'm actually 987 years old. So, in the grand scheme of things, we haven't known each other that long.
Yeah. I'm coming up on 700. I'm 689.
But I originally met the sauce in the cave that I first discovered the light in. And if you know my story, it starts 900 years ago when I wandered upon this grand expansive cavern on one of my daily hikes. And actually in this cavern that I spent 30 years in, on year 27, I encountered a barbecue stand. And sure enough, the sauce, Sam Dino, was the man behind it. So, like, how did you even end up in that cavern?
I just wanted seclusion. I wanted seclusion. I had to get away in order to be able to collect my thoughts because it was total chaos at that time. A lot more than what people would expect now because you didn't have everything that you have now.
Right.
Everything we had then, we had to create it. We had to make it from nothing.
Right.
So,
but like, surely that couldn't have been good for business. You're working a barbecue stand in a deep, expansive cavern that, you know, it took me 30 years to get out of. I doubt you had many customers.
Well, we had customers by the millions.
By the millions?
By the millions.
Were you feeding animals or humans or what? Like, who was coming in?
The people. The people would come. The families would come.
Yeah.
And they're coming because they know they've been waiting years and years for this sauce.
I got you.
So when they come, it's not just a sacrifice.
Yeah.
They bring their animals expecting a sacrifice, but they leave with what I would say is
blessings.
Yes, but more. They would leave with a delicacy.
A delicacy.
Yes, that's what I'm looking for. They would leave with a delicacy and something that they could be proud of, you know, so.
I know I did. I mean, that sandwich, that barbecue sandwich you made was what got me through the next 3 years until I finally discovered the light. And, you know, the rest is history. The light bringer from that point on, past 800 years.
And that was young in your life. You was a young man when I met you. So, yeah. I mean.
But let's talk about desire. Because, you know, you said you had customers by the millions. I mean, what do you think drove them to you? Desire? Like, how did they find you in this cave?
I mean, only logical explanation is that people back then, their scent was more keen than it is now.
I see.
Now people more nose blind. I don't know if it's the Febreze.
It's overstimulation. There's so much stimulant visually, auditorily, you know, smell. I don't even know what that's called, but you're right. There's so much overstimulation. And back in the day, it's kind of like when somebody goes blind, they can hear better all of a sudden, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because one of their senses have been so dulled, the rest get heightened. And I think some people say that's speculation. Maybe it is, but I think when you lose a sense, it's just natural to fixate more on the others and they improve.
And I think one thing, after the first ice age, things were really dry and people were rotten to the bones. So there was more really in the false graves, but the sauce was able to revive them, able to fulfill them and bring life back into their bones.
So the sauce brought people out of the grave.
Out of the grave.
That's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, because outside of just being known as the sauce, you're known as what, the purist?
The purist.
And being able to make a product that's so pure that it brings people out of death is something that I'm very interested in. I'm very interested in products that get people out of the mentality of death.
Absolutely. And it comes from the creator. It comes directly from the creator. And if you break it down in a mathematical sense, it was never anything just too simple. Mm-hmm. It wasn't adding and subtracting. God said immediately, multiply and be fruitful and replenish the earth. It was already here and established, but it needed to be replenished.
Yeah. Order needed to be brought.
People need to be brought out of those false graves and back into a livelihood.
Yeah.
So they could thrive in society, as a society, and be able to enforce some rules and kind of get out of that barbaric state. Yeah.
Sense of smell, the olfactory, as someone in the chat. We got some people asking, wait, the Lightbringer believes in a creator, a monotheistic one. I'm going to get into that a little bit later, because I've got a lot of thoughts on it. But, you know, to the first topic, we wanted to talk about desire. I think most products today are actually grounded in death. To some sense, they're grounded in death. And because when you think about the material world, it's kind of a compromise of potential, right? When you make a product, the product represents everything it isn't. You know, people have said, how do you define something is basically when you subtract it from everything it isn't, is what something is. And I think when you think about natural creation, nature itself, it has almost an infinite replenishing to it. Whereas human product is almost death-based by nature. You'd agree with that, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so the first topic of the night is, I think desire is misrepresented. I think it's not defined properly. So what would you say desire represents?
I would really say for me and for a lot of people that I've experienced with desire, it more represents the afflictions of a person more so than it does what you want to have or what you want or what you actually need. So when I say affliction, a lot of people will hurt themselves in ways that's they might not be able to turn around for, basically trading in something they can't keep for something they can't lose.
Right.
And so
something they can't keep for something they can't lose. Something they can't keep for something they can't lose. Are you saying, like, somebody might pursue, let's say they buy something, but then they become attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
So attached that if they were to lose it, they would end up below where they were before even owning it.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Or let's say you got a friendship, and you two guys friends, and one of y'all's with one of the girls or the women are maybe promiscuous, and you got a lifelong friendship, and would you trade in that friendship for the promiscuity of one night your whole life?
Right.
That's
and you should, obviously that's a pretty bad exchange.
Yeah, it's a bad exchange. You trading something you can't keep for something you can't lose.
Yeah.
Your friendship, you know, you can't lose your friends. You can't lose your friendship and your relationships
for a one night stand.
Exactly.
For some thoughty.
Yeah.
You don't want to trade a friendship for a thought.
It just it's one of those things that where desire is overrated.
Yeah.
Very overrated.
So the point I want to pick up, I'm sure some people will disagree with my take here, but I think desire it's shamed in a way it was never meant to be shamed. And so when you think of traditional religious, any religion, you know, Muslim, Christianity, Hinduism, etc., they kind of shame desire. Like, desire is not something that's promoted in any religion that I know of, unless it's like desire to be closer to God. Right?
I'd say in Buddhism, it's a little bit different.
You think in Buddhism they promote desire?
Yeah, absolutely.
How do Buddhists promote desire?
Because if you are a true Buddhist, then you believe me in you know for a fact that life is like a dream. It's like a dream, and consciousness is not something anybody has control of. So that's the way they believe. They believe in just living life and keeping everything pure. So they believe that nobody sees the world the same.
Yeah.
And it can change just like that. Just like when you sleep, you don't know you're having a dream. It's really real. But when you wake up, It changes just like that.
So let me give you some insight from some people in the chat, because somebody's picking you up on your point. So they go, I disagree with the sauce. I believe in a world comprised of materials, which can be considered as distinct only through a distinctly human point of view. But if we were to consider things relative to the nature as it occurs outwardly, we'd find desire is more or less without feeling as we understand it. It's an illusion, perhaps not so partial. What do you think about that?
Honestly, there's no evidence of none of this stuff. You see what I'm saying? Like, right, all this stuff that's around us, even there's no evidence of any of it, except in your own mind and the way you see it, and nobody sees it the same.
Yeah.
So you may be like, why does this person do this or do that? But they just simply don't see the world the same.
So this might sound like a shallow interpretation, but here's my thoughts on desire. Okay, when you think about, let's say, Christmas, let's say you got three kids and it's Christmas, and one of the kids may be kind of selfish. You know, maybe they're asking for everything. They're like Dudley from Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
I got 38 gifts last year, and you're only giving me 34 this year. But the kid who desires more, I would argue, has more of appreciation for life and more of a gratitude than the person with no desire at all. Meaning the person who doesn't have any desire, I think to a degree is doing a disservice to creation. Because I think at the foundation of desire is at least an appreciation to a degree of existence. And the reason I say that is because when you desire something, you automatically are validating creation to a degree, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you think of like suicidal people or depressed people, and they don't want anything, like,
nothing can please them.
Nothing completes them. I just want to die. Nothing's good. Everything's bad. I'd argue the person who's just incredibly materialistic and just yearns for everything, just has this overarching desire, even if it's selfish, has more of a nature of gratefulness about them than the person who desires nothing. I actually think having no desire is almost a form of masochism. Like, it's a form of self-hate and self-torture.
I think so too. Because do you not want anything for yourself? Or do you not want to grow as a person? And I mean,
right. And you're obviously given this life, you know, you're brought into creation, whether that's by God or nature itself. Are you not meant to desire something? Right?
Oh, definitely.
And so definitely. I think we get desire all wrong. I think desire is completely misrepresented. Because part of your identity, part of your unique code is founded in desire. You know, there are some people, grown adults, right, who can't tell you what they want. You know what I'm talking about. Like, you could ask some people, what do you want? And they couldn't even answer the question. And so how could you say that person appreciates life if they don't even know what they want?
I can't see it. Like,
can't see it.
Mm-mm.
That's what I'm saying. We got somebody in the chat. I don't believe God would give us the capacity for desire if it couldn't be used for good things. Obviously, addiction is a destructive use of desire, but one can desire productive and good things. And yeah, I agree with that. I just think that, and maybe I'm wrong here, but I think like just the word desire in and of itself is a shamed word when it in traditional religion. Like, to want something is almost sacrilegious, unless it's like the glory of God, right?
I would have to disagree with that, because God didn't just put us here. Before he put us here, he put everything else here.
Yeah.
And thought it was good. and gave us dominion over everything.
Right.
So that means that whatever we want, whatever we desire, we can have because we have dominion over everything.
Right.
But we have to have respect in a relationship like with everything else that was here before us.
Right.
Including the animals and respecting the earth and what's natural.
Right.
So it's all there for the taking. Like, so why wouldn't it be? It wouldn't, mm-hmm. it wouldn't be a world of all these great things for people not to have.
Yeah. Well, another thing I think that's interesting about desire is nature, and you could argue the created order, right? Nature is created by God and there's a created order to it. I think that it almost has a self-writing structure, like it writes itself. Mm-hmm. And so an example people use, or you know, I'll use here, and this isn't to shame anybody, but when you think about the declining birth rates, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sure, you can have a society that isn't having a lot of kids. And, you know, wealthier societies tend to have less babies. That's, like, just statistically proven. But no matter what your opinions are or what you believe, if you're part of a society that ends up having no kids, your opinions are going to fade away into the void. Fade away into the void.
Mm-hmm. Because there's nobody to keep it alive.
There's nobody to keep it alive. Just as if we were all, you know, gay or lesbian, we'd only last one generation,
mm-hmm.
and then we'd go away.
Yep.
And so I think when you have an unnatural desire, part of the human condition in our history is nature correcting these unnatural desires over time. Because if you maintain an unnatural desire for too long, something's going to come along and break it. Because it's not conducive to mm-hmm. life. It's antithetical to life. And so I want to get people out of the mindset of I need to be ashamed of my desires. And I'm not trying to promote negative desires. I'm just saying, part of your identity is knowing what you want.
And that's a part of being pure. Pure of heart, lie not against the truth. If the truth is you want something, go get it. Don't lie to yourself. You know, that's how I feel.
Right. So we got some people in the chat. It's excess, which is disliked. God can be considered as all which is right, almost in the same sense Plato would have considered goodness or godliness. He'd call it piety.
And that's the thing about it. A lot of people may disagree with me with this, but we're created in the image and the likeness of God. And so if God is all right, and then we okay too.
Right.
We will be, or we'll get to that point, but inside of us is purity and goodness and also everything else.
Right.
So it's really all about what you embrace. And that's a part of the free will.
Mm-hmm.
God, the creator, is not going to give you a free will and then condemn you for what the choices you made.
Mm-hmm.
No, the choices that you make have consequences automatically. Like if you do good things, then it may seem like no good deed goes unpunished because the world doesn't want you to do good. So right. They're going to discourage that kind of action. Like, you know, so, but when you're doing bad, if you're promoting murder or sex or drugs and stuff like that, you see, you got a big following. A lot of people support that because that's destruction. You know, as people, we have the ability to double think. When I say that double think, that's, we know that something's a lie, but we'll still support it
mm-hmm.
like fully. Like Christmas,
yeah,
Easter, you know, Easter should be about the Christ being born again and coming back on the third day, but it's made about a bunny hatching eggs. No bunny has eggs, but we promote this stuff.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
It's a lie, and we go and spend our money on it, you know, and so anything that we desire in life, we can make it happen.
Yeah. So let me pick you up on when you say double think,
because
mm-hmm. I have a principle I believe in. And it's, I believe the people most capable of maintaining two paradoxical beliefs are the happiest. And so what I mean by that is most people love more than anything to pick a side and stay on it. They like to remain in the know, in the known, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's so easy as a person to go, I know this to be true and I'm going to stick to it. And I'll use monks as an example, because monks will often get touted as holy or in history,
mm-hmm.
like the way that they would fast.
But they don't look at themselves like that.
Or the way they'd, you know, stay away from material possessions.
Mm-hmm.
But I would argue that they cut themselves off to so much of the natural experience living that way that they're not right, that they're in fact in the wrong. And I think the people I know who are the happiest people I know are people wholly comfortable maintaining paradoxical beliefs at the same time. And I don't mean to call them hypocrites. I just mean that they can maintain this duality within them.
And I believe the duality comes within because in my life, I've been exposed to many different religions. And at one point in my life, I was never really at a crossroad, but being raised as a Christian, my granddaddy was an evangelist.
Yeah.
And but I didn't get my relationship with God from going to church all my life as a child. I got my relationship with God from my own personal experiences
mm-hmm.
as an adult. So when I was exposed to Islam and Buddhism, I prayed about it, of course,
mm-hmm.
you know, to my God and to my mediator,
right?
You know, Yeshua, Jesus Christ, you know. So what the Spirit led me to is, when I was walking with the Spirit, is not to judge anybody else,
right?
Not to judge them, not to judge the Muslims or the Christians or the Buddhists or the
right.
Confucius, none of that, because I have my own mind. Every person has their own mind.
Mm-hmm.
So if you open up your heart and open your spirit up to knowledge, and then you get the right perception, so nobody can deceive you. So, hey, I got this book for myself. I got the Bible. I got the Quran. I got, you know, the apocryphy,
mm-hmm.
All these different religious texts and stuff for me to study and become a better child of God,
right.
Just in general, overall.
So let me ask you this. If God is that which is good, right? God is what is good. And goodness is that which is right. Then is the purity within us realized when we search for knowledge? Or is it found when we trust in God's word? Or do you think they might be the same thing?
I would say they're the same thing. But when you're reading from any text, you're taking a chance on it being manipulated by a man or a woman or some point in history.
Right.
When you get it directly from the Spirit and your intuition, it's truth. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know it's truth because
so I believe in intuition almost more than any learned knowledge.
So that's what I believe. I go off my intuition more than anything. Somebody asked me, like, Zach, one of the guys might come down or something, and I say, I tell them what they want before they get to me. And they'd be like, how'd you know that? And I said, well, my intuition told me.
Right.
So.
Right. I agree. Intuition is not talked about a lot today, but I think it's one of the best things we can use to know what's actually right and wrong is intuition.
Mm-hmm. And it's not something you're born with. It's a learned behavior. It's the subconscious. It's what we learn throughout our whole life in the cumulative way. And so.
We got a little alarm going off, guys. Sorry about that.
The time is now.
The time is now. No. So maybe wrapping up on the desire topic, I want to add a little bit of a point to it. Maybe it's unrelated, but I want to talk about kids a little bit. You know, one of the things that's stated in the Bible is be fruitful and multiply. I think there's a lot of wisdom in the Bible obviously, whether you believe in God or not, there's a lot of wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about kids as almost an ode of gratitude to creation itself. And the reason I say that is, let's say God isn't real. Now, I believe in God, but let's say he's not real. And you just have the earth. You just have creation, right? All that we witness and have experienced and have observed has led up to us existing. When you think about the billions of years of evolution and all the animals that went through countless rebirths and deaths, building a superior being, right? That eventually netted us. Let's say you're not a believer, you're an evolutionist.
Yeah, that's evolution. Mm-hmm.
Still, you have to think all the effort and all the pain and all the time and struggle organic beings put in to our creation. It's not like it was easy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't say, obviously, none of us can say for sure what an animal feels, but billions upon billions of animal deaths and pain and suffering and a very lack of awareness led up to us existing. And to then turn and be a human, which is the pinnacle of what we know creation to be, the pinnacle of organic life, and go, we're not deserving of reproduction. Like to go, I choose not to have kids. Is almost shunning all of that work.
Because mm-hmm.
you got to think, if you imagine nature to be working for billions of years before we came to be, and then us in our time frame, you know, in our history, decide, you know what, I'd rather not have any kids. That's almost going to Earth, you know, saying to Earth, our creation itself, hey, you know those billions of years of painful evolution? Well, we deemed you not worthy.
Right.
Like, we're not really, like, we're not grateful for it. We don't want to reproduce. Life is hard. Life is suffering. Why bring a kid into the world today, right?
Mm-hmm.
People say that. Mm-hmm. People say that. Why bring a kid into the world today? And you got to keep in mind, the likelihood they would die brutally in the past was far higher than it mm-hmm. is today.
And my thing is, when somebody say something to me like that, I might not say anything to that person, anything more than I might say, you got here some kind of way. Somebody gave you a chance at life.
Right.
So, I mean, that's our purpose. That's our purpose is to keep life going. Because God is spirit and truth, must be worshipped in spirit and truth. A lot of people looking for God and thinking that God is like a puppet master
right.
somewhere in the sky that's controlling people's actions and what you do and what you say and all that.
Right.
But Jesus said God is spirit and truth and must be worshipped in spirit and truth. And every religious text backs up God as a spiritual being, not as a physical being. And then a lot of people will attribute the characteristics of a person to God.
Yeah.
As far as how we act and say we get angry and we got hate in us. I don't believe God indulges in that kind of stuff. I think it's us. It's mm-hmm. us doing all this stuff, and we're looking for a scapegoat and somebody to blame it on. But when it all boils down to it, it's the individual.
Yeah.
And being human is what makes us unique. As far as no person can exist by themselves. You know what I'm saying? Like, it takes a man and a woman to make one person. Whether you're a male or a female, you came from a man and a woman.
Right.
So as a man, you might have more of your mother's characteristics. That don't mean God made a mistake and you was meant to be a woman. You just more like your mama. Or you may look more like your daddy as a woman. That don't mean you was meant to be a man. You're a woman made up of a man and a woman. Or you're a man made up of a man and a woman. So, That's one of the things that gets in the way of our desires, I think, is us not actually knowing who we are. And once you know who you are, then doors start to open up and you start to figure out stuff that you wouldn't have normally had privy to.
So I'm going to try and unpack one of these questions. The deeper question is to ask precisely how we can know what is good. Is it Christian God's word? It seems to me we are assuming whatever God created, all things had a human perspective. What compels the movement of other things, if so? Do they take after humans and they're in God? That is, rocks which tumble in a way similar to humans when they locomote. Having a hard time reading this chat. But, yeah.
Well, see, Let's see, the thing is, people put a limit on God. Like, why would it be all these different kinds of birds and fish and rocks and different colors of everything else in life, but besides people? Mm-hmm. Why we got to be limited? Why can't it be all different kinds of types of people, big, small, small, all different types of colors?
Yeah.
Why did everything have to, why would it be limited when it comes to us?
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that.
Well, I think humans are the ones who desire limits so desperately. Right. I think we are desperate for limits because it keeps the world easy to explain. I think we are desperate for easy explanations, and limits give that. Like, if you can build a structure and you can properly define the limits, it's very easy to live that way because then you don't have to think about the potential. Potential is a huge burden to hold on to because potential means anything could happen. You could have been this. They could have been that. We could have achieved this. It's much easier to go, this is the structure and we abide by this, and maybe you'll find more peace in your soul. But I think our souls are going to eternally be burdened by grappling with that potential, the infinite potential. I don't think we're escaping it.
And I don't grapple with it. What I believe in potential is potentiality that is meant to be expanded. You expand your potentiality. Like, if you got a certain skill set, it's only going to get better the more you practice it. The more you enhance it, it's only going to get better. And your worth is not going to decrease. It's going to peak all the way. It's going to keep growing and growing and growing, and until it just dissolves one day. But whenever you have potential, then you have an obligation to bring that out and to be a servant of your own potential, and because that's how you're going to survive.
Mm-hmm.
Because people need each other. We need each other. Nobody can do anything by themselves. So mm-hmm. if you come up with a great discovery, you're going to have to share it with somebody, and you'll see how it's beneficial to more than just you, you know.
So, I'm going to try and transition to our next topic and tie in a couple of these comments with it. And so I'll start with this. It goes, Christian says, why should humans relate to nature if the human purpose is a special one? Is there not a contradiction there?
Very much.
And I'd say the overarching topic of tonight is gratitude for existence. And to pick up on that point, I would argue there's no limit to the desires humans have. Like, we desire some pretty unnatural things. Am I right?
One thing that we desire that's, to me, that's unnatural is we desire to be the most intelligent creature in creation. And I just don't believe that. People write
books. You don't think we're the most intelligent creature in creation?
Nope.
What about the observable? Like Earth, we're the most intelligent. Are you saying no?
I'm saying that humans are not the most intelligent creation.
Okay, hold up. So are you alluding to aliens here?
No, I'm alluding to we are the aliens because everything was here before us. So we came after everything else. But when I say that, what I mean is education doesn't equal intelligence.
Yeah.
We write the books, we make the storylines and this and that, but the fact is we killing ourselves. Mm-hmm. Genocide, you know what I'm saying? We so intelligent, but we don't know how to live.
Right.
Everything else is in the correct order. We have a lot of shame. Everything else in the creation that I see as far as the birds, the animals, the fish of the sea and all that stuff. They're doing what they're supposed to be doing, but we're kind of all over the place. There's right. chaos, a lot of chaos, but during the chaos is opportunity.
So who's more intelligent? But who would you say is more intelligent than us?
There's probably a lot of animals more intelligent than us.
Definitely more in with the created order than we are. Yeah,
when it comes to that nature and natural, right. you know, knowing how to live and just doing what God commanded them to do. You know, God told us to multiply and be fruitful. You don't see a lot of people doing that. But if you ride down the road, you might just see a dog, some dogs yeah. multiplying right there just like that.
So but here's one of the questions I'd had a while back and tie this in together. So today there's a lot of disparity between men and women, right? Like I'd argue the balance between men and women is probably the worst it's ever been, at least in the West.
Yes, it definitely is.
Like we just can't seem to get it right. Like long-term relationships get harder and harder.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I'd asked a Christian was, you know, Eve was created after Adam. And, you know, it's stated that Adam needed a companion and God wanted to give that to him mm-hmm. or he was lonely. I don't know the exact interpretations, but I had asked, what was Adam's purpose before Eve? Before Eve was created and Adam, you know, stood alone, what was he intended to do?
To work.
And the answer that was given to me, sort of, yeah, to work, was to bring order to the garden or order to the chaos, mm-hmm. make it beautiful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He was supposed to make nature beautiful.
Till the grounds. Mm-hmm.
And when you think about it like that, like the inherent purpose originally was to bring order to nature, or make it beautiful is actually what I was told.
And also, when it comes to Adam and the creation, it actually represents the whole tribe. There was more than just one person in creation then, because they give you the storyline is more like an example.
Right.
But you see when Adam and Eve have kids, their kids go out and get married. So there's other people out there.
Adam and Eve have kids?
Yeah.
Okay.
Cain and Abel.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So when Cain killed Abel, God put a mark on his head that would be there forever. So like right. a tattoo. So when he went out into the world, everybody would know he killed his brother.
Yeah.
Right? Is that not what the word says?
Yeah,
that?
True.
So he went out, he found a wife somewhere. So that tells us that we don't get the whole story.
Right.
You got to put it together. It's like a puzzle.
Right.
But there's always been people, because whenever in the first chapter when God made, he said, let us make man, male and female, he created them. And just let us make man after our image and our likeness, male and female, he created them. Multiply and replenish the earth. If it's something, it didn't say multiply and fill the earth. It said multiply and replenish the earth. So mm-hmm. that's something that's already been there in existence. So if you're replenishing something, it's already something that's there. Just like you said, the garden. He's supposed to make the garden beautiful.
Right.
You can't make something there. You can't make something beautiful that don't exist already.
Right.
So it's already there in place, just like what we born into.
Speaking back to some animals might be more intelligent than humans. Somebody brought up a good point. I actually know the study they're talking about here. There's some slime molds, something to that effect, where scientists put them in like a lab to find the best and most efficient pathways mm-hmm. to resources like food.
Yeah.
And the mold could find the perfect, most articulate like pathways to get the resources.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could argue that mold is more in line with nature than humans are. But would that make them more intelligent?
It just depends on what you consider intelligent. Like mm-hmm. I said before, education doesn't equal intelligence. Like common sense is not common.
True.
So that's how I feel about people and animals and stuff like that. I feel like we put ourselves on a pedestal just because we can.
Yeah, we definitely can.
You know, so, but that doesn't mean like, you see when people don't respect the order, what happens? You jump out there in the ocean with a big whale, you gone. you're not going to be in the belly of the whale like Joel and make it out.
True.
You know.
In the interest of keeping the topic of the night based on gratitude, let's get into our second topic. Why can't people appreciate what they have? And let me give some examples, because this is a conversation me and you have had before. Let's talk about the immigration crisis going on right now. A lot of the immigrants coming in, you could argue, are getting more benefits than sitting citizens in America, right?
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't seem fair, does it? Okay, and then you've also got, there's a lot of companies out there where if you're a new sign up, you're a new subscriber, you're going to get a deal that's far better than a deal you could get as an existing one, right? That's mm-hmm. another example. And then a classic one that we all know is a new relationship, you're far more likely to go above and beyond than a sitting one. So, like, you might have a girlfriend, but if you end up going out with this new girl, it's going to be like nothing's off the table. You know, I'll spend mm-hmm. whatever on that first date to be impressive, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think girls do that too. Like, they show out.
Oh, yeah.
In the beginning.
Put their best face on.
Yeah, they put it all out there. And a couple months in, you're like, this isn't actually how...
Like, this is what I signed up for.
this is not what I was signing up for. I thought I was getting something else. And so I think it just speaks to our nature that when we've held on to something, we start to disregard it.
And that's a lack of loyalty. Really, it's a lack of loyalty.
You think it's loyalty?
Oh, absolutely. Because think about it. If you're an existing customer, let's say we're at Spectrum,
mm-hmm.
and you've been with them for 10 years, and you're paying $80 a month.
Right.
And you talk to this guy on the phone, and I'm on Spectrum, man, for $29 a month for the next 2 years.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, and you can't get a deal, and you've been loyal to these guys. But you don't get the same loyalty back.
No, you don't. So how do we fix that?
You tell them you're done. You tell them I'm done. I don't want to do this no more. And they'll come begging back. They'll be like, well, I tell you what, we got this promo for you. They'll start to unleash their true potential then.
So you cancel your plan, you break up with your girlfriend, and they're going to come back with more offerings.
Yes.
Yes.
They're going to have to get right.
They're going to have to get right. Because they often don't appreciate you
mm-hmm.
until you show them you're worth appreciating, right?
Yep. You never miss a good thing until it's gone.
They'll start arguing about the semantics,
mm-hmm.
you know? I mean, you're telling me that story, you know, one of them stories about one of the pimps back in the day.
Oh, yeah. You know, you can't be a pimp and be a nice guy. You might well go and get you a regular job at the grocery store, sacking groceries or something. Because, you know, as a pimp, you try to be nice. You go down and you take the girls some Lunchables and stuff. They've been out there on the streets all night and stuff, working and stuff. So you bring them some food and stuff. And next thing you know, they fighting because they don't appreciate it. One got a Butterfinger in their Lunchable and the other one got a Nestle bar, you know? So
Lunchables, are those the preferred choice to give out to your ladies?
Most definitely.
When you're a pimp? That's not a bad call, I mean.
That's what I seen. But you know what I'm saying? You don't want to really... The pimps back then, they weren't going to do too much because they don't want to mess up their bankroll.
True.
You know?
Because pimping ain't easy.
It's not
easy.
As
they say.
Not at all. You know, that's why men just recently became pimps. You know, it was always the women that was the pimps. The madams, because they know the women. You know,
So historically, men weren't pimps?
No. Men were never pimps back in the day. They were just the tricks.
Oh.
Yeah, they paid the bills, you know, and they paid for the company of a woman,
mm-hmm.
you know, after a hard day's work. And they went to the saloon, had a drink, had a little company. But no, they was never pimping. There was never pimps like that.
I wonder if we still got Chris in the chat. Chris, if you're still in the chat, what do you think about pimping? I mean, we're getting some insight. Just curious to hear your thoughts. But that's true, you know, lack of appreciation. That's where, is that where the rings come in?
That's what the rings come in is just a tie. Mm-hmm. It locks you in. People worship the rings. Everything starts with the rings. You know, with these ties I bind, your life is
Lord
mine.
Of the
your
rings.
Life is mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like when you get married, you put that ring on your finger.
Yeah.
And it's got to be sanctioned by a judge who worshiped the ring.
Mm-hmm.
So it starts with the rings. And when it gets very complex, it turns into a cylinder. You know, and everything comes from those cylinders. You know,
man,
what I'm saying?
You're getting next level on me now. You're doing all kind of mental jujitsu here.
But you know what I mean, though.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just balls are balling. You know, I mean, it's just it boils down to that. We're not gonna keep thriving unless we do.
So it's all balls.
It's all balls.
See,
that's all we got is balls in our word.
And see, that's what's so interesting. For those listening at home, we've come to this conclusion before.
Most definitely.
That it's all balls.
It starts with the balls. I mean, seriously, like the way it happens is the balls go in motion, get in motion and turn, and it's a continual cycle. There's no edges or corners to stop life
True.
From flowing. So when the balls are rolling and the sauce is accumulating, life is going, because then you're able to keep everything fertilized and forthcoming.
You know, that speaks to a point that, you know, I'm curious about. If nature is predominantly balls, like even on the atomic level,
mm-hmm, definitely,
would it not then make sense that our peak form is a ball? Like, over enough long enough period of time, humans might become a ball.
Oh, I think we'll become water before we become a ball, because the water creates the balls. You see what I'm saying? So in the waters within the waters, we'll be in the water, because we born natural born swimmers. You know, like if somebody's trying to have a child, but they're not trying to have a child, but
right.
You're being active, you're being sexually active, and so there's a billion swimmers coming out of you, trying to survive and trying to live, and only one of those billions of swimmers are going to make it.
That's true.
So you're a tough guy.
Yeah.
You outswim the billion other motherfuckers to get to this egg, to get in this life.
That's true.
And that egg is also a ball. Just shaped a little different.
Yeah. So you're saying balls is it.
That's
like,
it.
That is it.
That's it. That's the beginning, the alpha and the omega.
What,
the beginning
how does,
and the end.
How does that play in with string theory and frequencies, though? Like, you know, like people say string theory. Everything's made of strings. And then, you know, frequencies.
Yeah.
Like certain hertz of music.
And the frequencies now are not necessarily being used for good no more. Because before we could even talk, we could make a sound like, and it means something.
Yeah,
but now
yeah.
The frequency that you might get through your TV or through the air could be something that's a form of a weapon or something.
Do you think frequency as a whole are a ball? Like, do you think frequency might be a ball?
No.
No?
No.
Well, then it's hard to say everything's balls, right?
But frequency is not that important.
Frequency isn't important?
It's not that important. You see what I'm saying? Because we can always create frequency. But as far as everything else, balls to the wall.
To the sweat drips down, you know, to the window,
and they're all
to the wall.
All they're going to call.
They will. They will call. So what do you got? What do you got for us, Mr. Sauce?
I think we got some, I think we got a lot of supporters out here of the light and the truth.
Yeah.
So, and I think that together we're all figured out. if we put our heads together, because mm-hmm. in order for people to remain humble, God didn't give everything to just anybody in particular.
Right.
So he gave everybody something and didn't leave anybody with nothing. So we got to take what we got and put it together to make a collective whole, something that's going to be productive. Yeah. And it's going to be what I like to call is the residual.
The residual?
The sauce is the residual. And to me, what the residual, I'm made up of the residual. The residual is what's going to be left when everything's gone. When there's nothing left at all, the residual remains.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the residual is. So.
So there's a verse in the Bible about the chaff will be burned away.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's kind of like referencing sin, or mm-hmm. the part of you that sin will be burned away.
Yes.
And all that's left is, you know, what will remain.
Mm-hmm. That's the residual.
The residual. And I think about that a lot, like what that means. I think we're born with an abstractive quality, like abstract thought, and a purity that goes away as we get older. It's harder to hold on to. Like, children have it, but we lose it as we get older.
Oh, absolutely. And I like to reference something that my mother would say all the time. She said, if you live long enough, you'd be once an adult, twice a child.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah.
Well, that gives me hope.
So whenever you live in your life, you as a child, as innocence, and then you grow and you experience and you go through things in life like hardship and everything that life brings. But if you live older and you get older, you'll start to go back into forgetfulness.
Yeah.
Like you won't have any knowledge of those bad things that's around you. You'll just exist and be worry free, like a Hakuna Matata.
Hakuna Matata.
You know, old man sitting on the porch, and you know, who knows where his mind's at.
Yeah.
So he's like a child again. Like you see a kid playing, you know, you have to stop him because they don't know the dangers of the world yet.
Yeah.
So that's innocence at its purest.
So I'm going to give a little spill and then we'll go out on one topic, a final topic. I think you should get something in your mind for a final.
All right.
But, you know, part of what we talked about tonight is related to gratitude, obviously. But this is going to be the last episode of the season one of the False Grace podcast. And so season two, we've got a lot of big things planned. But part of season two, I'll announce more of the plans later on, but is a further definition of what we represent, of what this is all about. And I talked about it a little bit tonight in terms of the paradoxical belief system. Those who can maintain paradoxical beliefs comfortably, tend to be the happiest people. I think we are so pressed, so pressured into finding exact definitions, exact explanations, exact ways of being, that we have so much hubris with our own human condition. Like, we are very limited. Every perspective is an individual perspective. That's what you need to understand.
Mm-hmm.
Every perspective stems from some individual perspective. And we live in an ecosystem of consciousness. And so finding a way to detach from this pressure of conformity of belief is part of what this is all about. How do we escape from that attachment and comfortably exist in the potential and the duality and the paradox? False Graves, you know, the statement that defined it was, imagine if we could live this life like Minecraft, how much fun we would have. Imagine how much fun we could have in this world if we played it like Minecraft, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we think when we die, that's it. That's the end. And so we're hell-bent on a couple limited things. knowing that we're limited and we will die, we want to cement legacy. We want to get as much pleasure in this life as we can, right? We want to have as strong of financial situation as we can. We want to be the best of the best because we have limited time. If we flipped it to this is just about fun, not in a hedonistic way, but it's meant to be an enjoyable experience, and that death truly has been conquered, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everything changes. You're no longer going to have all these limiting beliefs if you believe that.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people believe that that they're so limited, if things don't go their way, they just want to die. They'll kill themselves. Like, they'd be like, I'm just going to kill myself.
Yeah.
And that's childish and selfish because you don't know. Nobody really knows.
I think that belief in the modern world comes mostly from getting what you want so often.
Oh, yeah.
So like in the past, most of your life was spent not getting what you want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of hardship with nature and death and war and invading tribes and plagues and parasites and all these things. But a lot of people in the modern era, they might grow up in a decent household, get what they want. The moment life throws them a curveball, I want to die.
Yep.
I want to die. Right? Because mm-hmm. things ain't going right anymore. And that's a very shallow way of looking at it.
Yep. It's childish. Because a child doesn't know. You know what I'm saying? A kid just doesn't know.
Yeah.
But once you've experienced it, if you've ever died and came back, I don't know many people who have, but
have you?
That's something that we've experienced, yeah, and came back because, believe it or not, you die every day. The moment you lay down and go to sleep, there's no guarantee you're going to wake up the next day. Consciousness is a complete surprise. How did you wake up?
Yeah.
Praise the Lord. You know, keep his commandments. But that's not something that you have control over.
You die every day. I like that. Can I piggyback off that for our final topic?
Absolutely.
So, final point I'd like to make tonight, you can obviously expound on it. There's another quote I live by, which is, never waste the void. Never waste the void. 99% of people waste it. And here's what I mean by the void. Almost all significant change that comes in people's lives comes in a point of crisis. Positive thinking and goals and what have you rarely change a person to their core. However, when you think about things like a death in the family, a divorce, the loss of a child, the loss of a consistent career, these are the points in people's life where a true change takes a hold of them, or it destroys them, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you hear about like a success story, or people talk about the trauma of their life, they'll often cite a crisis versus something good happening to them mm-hmm. that turned them around.
Yep.
And so when these things happen in your life, these crises, you never want to waste the void, because what it really is an introduction into the unknown. When we spend our whole lives trying to define and predict what's going to happen, our brains are wired that way. So when the unexpected happens and we're completely unprepared for it, it forces us to recondition our thinking. It forces us into a different way of being. And so you never want to waste the opportunity that comes with the crisis. And you may go, well, you know, how can I avoid them, right? You still want to avoid a death in the family, a divorce, etc. One of the ways you can expose yourself to the void every day and make it a part of your routine is always doing something out of your routine, always doing something out of practice. Starting up a conversation with a stranger, going to a random job site and asking for an interview, even if you already have a job. Doing something out of your element, doing something that forces you to be on edge, is meeting the void.
Mm-hmm.
It's you actually stepping up and looking at it as part of your routine. The people who do that are that's what success tends to be. The people who are most comfortable looking at the void every day. And the void is just the unknown. People want their daily lives as predictable as they can be. That's what we yearn for. Our animal brains yearn for that predictability. Finding a way to expose yourself as often as possible to the unknown, to the void, is one of the best things you can do for your life.
And I'm going to piggyback off you a little bit on that. And one of the things I think that would help with that is if we lived our life in a way that is more fulfilling. Like the question they ask, you might ask, what would you do if you got the call? We got the call, or the president came across TV and said, the world finna be ending in the next 5 minutes.
Yeah.
What you gonna do? The answer to the question is simple. It's the same thing you should be doing every day. If you feel like you should be doing something that much and it's that important, you should be already doing it. It's too late now. So at that point.
That's good.
Treat people like you want to be treated. You know, don't do anything to anybody that you wouldn't want done to you. So that's one of those things that will perpetually make things better once people start loving more.
Yeah.
People talk it. They say it all love and love and love and love and love and love. But the actions just don't show it. It's the action word, not something you say. It's just really something you show. Yeah. Like forgiveness. But you don't see it, do you? Like, you don't feel it. You know, like when you go out in the public and you see people, like you say, strike up a conversation with somebody you don't know, you might face a resistance.
True, exactly.
Of extreme hate, and you don't know this person. They have no reason to hate you.
but they might
show some love, though. Yeah,
and they might hate you.
Yes, just because.
And that's what I'm saying. That's the exposure.
Yeah, you gotta expose that, and then maybe some people don't know that. Somebody else in this world actually cares about them.
Mm-hmm.
They might actually believe nobody gives a fuck about me. But then you come along and they don't know you. You don't know them.
Mm-hmm.
But all of a sudden you show them love. So that could change their whole perspective. That could change their whole life.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they showing somebody love.
Yeah.
And then it's just a chain reaction.
But most people won't talk to that stranger because they're afraid of what they might hear.
The disappointment.
They're afraid of the unpredictability. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. Don't wait. Why wait for a life, a near-death experience to turn your life around? When somebody says, I had a near-death experience, and then I turned my whole life around, why didn't you do it before? Did you have to almost die? And I get that's a gift, like, if you succeed, but we shouldn't need to almost die. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing about it. That's why I say we just don't know. People do not know because we don't communicate. Communication is the rule, is the key that's gonna make everything better.
Mm-hmm.
All around the whole world.
We gotta communicate. So thank you, Chris, for being in the chat. Back when we get the Furman back on the show, I'm gonna have you on. He's actually kind of our super techie guy, believe it or not. And so I kind of need him to make all this work. But before we go out, I want to read what Chris is saying. If we assume that the state we exist in when we dream is the void, then we'd find it's not a void at all. We experience the ideas and representations our brains evolve the capacity to experience them. So he's saying maybe there's no void, or at least when we dream. Yeah, can you read that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I know it's kind of small.
Yeah, that's what the subconscious does naturally.
Yeah.
Most definitely.
That's sauce right there.
That's the sauce.
You that's got the it, pure. Chris.
Yeah.
Putting in some sauce. But
because if you think about it, we ain't seen this and we ain't witnessed. We've seen pictures and we've seen videos, but the idea of what put a band in space.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean.
Yeah. I would say, okay, bit of a tangent. Maybe it sounds totally off the wall. But this is my outro. I'd say this. Okay. Part of being a light bringer is you have to be a void walker. You have to have experience every day with the void and uncertainty. And if you, here's what happens. If you want to be happy when you shouldn't be, okay? If you want to be happy when you should not be happy, and you have an enemy, people will love you. So, like, let's look at Donald Trump, right? He's got all these lawsuits, tons of hate in the media. A lot of people want him to be dead, but he stays happy, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he has an enemy, which is the left, or the Democrats, or the media. He's got an enemy. And so people fall in behind him. They fall in behind Donald Trump because he's got an enemy. That's mm-hmm. a big part of it. And what I'm saying is, if he had no enemy and he was still happy, that's the thing. Imagine Trump was still just as in high spirits without any enemies. People will hate you. I'm telling you right now, people will absolutely hate you if you find a way to be happy when you shouldn't be without an enemy to fight. If you are hit with everything under the sun, cancer, divorce, you broke both your legs, you lost your job, and you're in high spirits and you don't blame anybody, people will not be happy about that. They will not like to see you. You know why?
Jealousy.
Because, Jello. Because people need that enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's part of the reason I'm going, you know, I'm trying to don this title of light bringer, is I can feel it. I can literally feel it in real time that negativity is drawn into me by proclaiming it.
Mm-hmm.
When I say I'm the light bringer, negativity literally has come, like, it's doubled down.
Yeah. You know why?
Why?
Because people want to ask the question, who you think you are? But they don't realize that they have the light within them too. You just bringing your light out. You just letting your light shine.
Yeah.
So
that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not going to hate you. You cannot make me hate you. And that's that. Unless you invented the hand dryers. Okay, if you invented the hand dryers, you can rot in hell. And that's all I got.
You're going to need a baptism after you wash your hands and dry.
So, as always, guys, stay in the light. You got an outro for him?
Wow.
Any final comments? A catchphrase.
Oh,
something about the sauce. Pure. He's cooking, chat. He's cooking. Thank you, Chris.
When it comes to the sauce, all I can say is anything done in a hurry is not going to be done good. And it's not going to be done right. There needs to be some love and then some time and patience put into it. That's how the sauce was created.
And remember, sauce is the boss.
Bossin', bossin' in the kitchen. Bossin', bossin'.